What's going on at Missouri Liberty Amendments Project, Keith?
Well, we're just a few likes away from 1,000 likes since October the 17th, which I'm no judge, and I don't know how to measure those things, but seems to me like there's a lot of interest. That's the way that's what I get from it.
A few likes away from what?
A few likes away from 1,000.
1,000? Wow.
Since October the 17th, and we try to promote the Convention of the States. We're not trying to overshadow what they're doing. They have their own Facebook page, Convention of the States, as well, and their own website, conventionofthestates.com, where folks can go and get more information.
So we've got this Missouri Liberty Amendments Project, and they are coordinating with a Convention of the States. Now, tell us how this hierarchy is structured, Keith.
Well, the hierarchy is that there's some folks who have been working for liberty for a long time. The face of the homeschool movement 25 years ago was Michael Ferris, and if anybody that name rings a bell, and in fact, it's there's a lot of folks across the country who know Mike Ferris and also have a lot of respect for him. He's the person who's standing between the family from Germany and Eric Holder, and he's the person who's, if you want to know about Common Core, he's been fighting it from the very beginning. And then there's Mark Meckler, who's the co-founder of Tea Party Patriots, and Eric O'Keefe, who's very active in state sovereignty issues. And right now they've put their heads together, and they are the leader and board members and executive behind conventionofthestates.com. I've been watching that grow. Most of this came about as, of course, of Mark Levin's book, The Liberty Amendments. I would say that in last July, if you came up to me and asked me what Article 5 was, I would say, well, it's probably the one after 4 and before 6. And I was like a lot of people who have set aside our Constitution and haven't read it lately and taken advantages of all the privileges and liberties it provides, but yet haven't realize that along with citizenship comes a great responsibility.
That's absolutely correct. And there are, there's no need for anyone out there to apologize for being in that state. There's only a need to recognize it. It's not unlike any kind of altar call. Recognize your condition and fix it. That's what we need to be doing. That's exactly where we need to be going.
For a long time there, Dave, I thought that the media, you could get the same story on just about every channel and every network, and I didn't know that there was folks that had an agenda in the media, and that you couldn't believe half of them. And really, I've learned that just about every book and every article, in fact, every speech has an agenda. And so I try to teach young people that I work with and talk to have a discerning mind, do their own research, go back to original sources, because there's just lots of information out there that's not correct, and especially about Article 5. In Missouri, there's been folks who've, for a long time, we think in Missouri we kind of had an uphill battle, but it's turning out not to be such an uphill battle, because folks are really ready for a change. But for decades really, anybody who knew anything about Article 5 of the Constitution knew about it because they've been taught to fear it, and they've been taught that there was, that it was just a bad subject. Don't go there. And what I've learned as I've studied over the last several months, as I read original sources and a lot of what's been written by Robert Nadelson, is a person I really respect. He's written more on the Constitution and specifically Article 5 than any other individual out there. He's been a constitutional scholar and working in academia in this area longer than a lot of folks who are talking about it have been alive. And I have a great deal of respect for Rob Nadelson. But if you read the actual documents and the records, what we're finding is a lot of what's been out there in terms of Article 5 has been misinformation. And folks have been taught to fear it. And what we're finding out about that, as you trace it back to its source, nearly all of that fear, that originated with the left. and then some conservative groups kind of picked it up a little bit. But what I want folks to know about Article 5, maybe who are hearing about it for the very first time, is first of all, it's in the Constitution. And it's the founders, or should I say the framers, design for two things. It's the framers' design for the people to amend their Constitution through their state legislatures. And it's the core mechanism for balancing the power between the states and the federal government. And it's never been used. The second part of that clause has never been used before. And you might say, well, no wonder we're in the shape we're in, because we've never grabbed hold of the rudder of the ship. I refer to it as the rudder. And I have referred to it on occasions as the safety belt and the brakes of the Constitution. It's one of the first things they did when they met in 1787, and it's one of the last things they did before they adjourned on October 15th, is to make sure that there was a process by which the people could initiate amending their own Constitution through the state legislatures.
Yeah, go through the story of George Mason on the last day of next to the last day of the convention. That's an interesting story. I've been through it with people. I know we have some new listeners tonight because you're here. So I want to I love to hear that story.
Well, you know, George Mason was the person who drafted Virginia's Declaration of Rights, and I didn't realize who he was. Virginia's Declaration of Rights is the precursor to the Declaration of Independence, and so that just tells you a little bit about who George Mason was. And for a long time, people who were telling the story weren't really telling it accurately. What happened was, as you talk about state sovereignty, this convention of 1787, when it started in May, they were sovereign countries, and they knew it. And in August, when they saw the what became of Article 5, the first draft, it allowed for states only to initiate the amending process. And so on October 15th, the reason that most of the sources say that George Mason stood up and he was, what some would say, in a state of alarm, he was not alarmed that the process from which, the reason he was alarmed, it had been completely changed as it came out of the Committee of Style. And as he studied it, he realized that it had been completely changed, and so the initiation of starting, the complete initiation process of starting a constitutional amendment process was given only to Congress. Exclusively, you know, it had just changed in the course of committee work, and so he stood up and made a statement and said, you know, in so many words, this is just not going to work. You know, Congress, if they become too powerful, they're not going to arrest their own tyranny. And so he allowed for what is about 21 words or so that were amended, that were put in by two other, and it allowed the application of the legislatures of two-thirds of the several states, then which Congress shall call a convention for proposing amendments, which shall be valid to all intents and purposes when ratified by three-fourths of the several states. So, in short, today, I mean, in their day, it was 9 states could call a convention. Today, we need 34 to have two-thirds. And it says that Congress shall. What happens is Congress becomes an agent of the states. Congress has no discretion at all on this process. And some would argue, but the reason that they have no discretion is this process is designed, and the purpose of it specifically is to go around a Congress that has abused its power. And so they have no, you know, the courts have helped this up. So they have no discretion. They call the time and the place, and then the states take over in terms of the convention. When I say take over, they have the ability to, each state, you know, in their day was sovereign, and they selected their own delegates. Now, we know these things because there was 22 conventions before the founding, and there was 11 or more afterwards that were closely related. So we know that when they called for a convention, Article 5 calls for a convention to propose an amendment. Now, this solution is not without some opponents. But, you know, our opponents have been saying the same thing for 40 years, and all of a sudden that's changed. Almost in the last few weeks, if you were listening carefully to the opponents, they never called this a constitutional convention. The reason that they've been calling it for a constitutional convention for 30 or 40 years is to scare people. But they're not calling it a constitutional convention anymore because that's not what it is. And today they're saying, oh, it's the same thing. Actually, a fifth grader who's a little advanced and has done his homework knows that a constitutional convention and a convention for proposing amendments are not the same thing. Another thing they're not saying anymore is that they're not maligning the Constitution of the United States. You see, for the last 30 or 40 years, some even conservative groups have been saying that our Constitution was adopted illegally, which would be a mockery to the founders. They would find it absurd. And if you read carefully the founding records, you know that there was only a few men that went beyond their credentials, beyond their commissions. Only New York and Massachusetts were limited to revising the articles. Only Alexander Hamilton stayed from the New York delegation. He didn't get a vote because the delegation was gone, but they allowed him to sign the Constitution as a citizen. Folks from Massachusetts, can be argued, might have gone over their commission. Technically, the ones from Delaware went slightly over their commission in their design of the House of Representatives because the Senate would fall, and with what they did in making a Senate fell within their credentials. But when they left that suffrage of one state, one vote in the House of Representatives design, it could be argued that Delaware might have went over their credentials. But out of 39 people, three or four, you know, one delegation or two could be argued at all. So this information has been put out there for a long time, and they're not saying it anymore because of the homework and the study and the work folks have done.
I want to jump in here just a second, good, Keith, because this is something that I've been telling people, and some listeners aren't as educated as you are, so I want people to understand that when Keith says went over their credentials, this is what I was saying week after week. 10 of the 13 states, that's 13 states minus the three that Keith just talked about, had authorized their delegates to write an entirely new document. This was not a runaway convention. This was not something that took on power of its own when it became a convention. It didn't just become its own superior power and do something that it wasn't authorized to do. 10 of the 13 states, minus the three that Keith just talked about, are the 10 who had authorized their delegation to write a new constitution. I'm sorry, Keith, go ahead.
No, there's some other important things to keep in mind about this topic. You know, first of all, why are we talking about it? Because there are folks out there who have been propagating the idea, and I call it the runaway ruse. It's a con, all right. It's a con because folks have been conned for quite a bit of time. And once again, this did not start with conservatives. This idea started by the left, and some folks picked it up. But why is it important? Is because all during this whole time, they had to have some kind of historical precedent for saying that this convention might run away.
Right.
Something that I think the founders would find absurd. And so they had to come up with some kind of historical precedent. Now, there was arguments by some as early as the ratification period that argued that, hey, some of these folks went over their credentials. So What happens is these folks were sent by the states, and they were called commissioners. When they arrived at the convention, they registered, and they registered at what they were there to do and what they had the power to do. And that's what will happen today. People, if we have a convention, they will show up, they'll take a roll, and they'll look at what the states have given their delegates power to do. first of all, some folks say, well, they went past the Articles of Confederation, and there's about three or four things you really need to know that's just not true. First of all, the Articles of Confederation had no provision for a convention. The Articles of Confederation, had no power to limit. These states were there by their own, once again, here's this term, they were there by their own sovereignty. It was residual sovereignty, and they hadn't given it up. And seven states had already called for the convention as early as December of a year earlier. So at least by February of 1787, seven states had already called for this convention. Now, two states asked that it be limited, and so Congress then knew they didn't have any power. They couldn't even recommend, as these states wanted them to do. So if you look very close at the language, it has the word opinion. It's the opinion that this should be done, but, make alterations and further provisions as many as necessary to render the federal constitution political system adequate. But New Jersey made, and what happened is we know is the states that came in after that did not limit their delegates. So that's an interesting story. It's history. But the sad thing is there have been folks that have maligned the Constitution. They have maligned the framers. And they don't realize that, if you read Madison as clearly as Federalist 40, he explains what happened. And when the Constitution Convention completed its work, it sent its recommendations to Congress. There were two recommendations. First, they asked them to approve the new Constitution, and second, they asked them to change the method of ratification. Now, if you read some public school textbooks, that they just don't get this right, but if you read the historical record, you'll see that all 13 state legislatures approved the new process by calling conventions in their states. Thus, Congress and all 13 states approved the new process before it was used. When I'm talking about the new process, I'm talking about the ratification process in terms of the number of states that had to approve it. The argument that the Constitution was adopted in an illegal manner is made by those who study only public school textbooks and not the full documentary record. It's time for people to quit defaming the Constitution of the United States.
Very, 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 very thorough. Thank you, Keith. And here's another thing. If you'll go back and read Madison's notes of the convention, and he took meticulous notes day after day after day, you'll find days when entire delegations or large parts of delegations were not there. Now, these guys weren't down at the local pub having a day off. What was happening is exactly what is going to happen this time, and that is delegates will be in constant communication every step of the process with their sovereign state. They will be working at the will of their state. This isn't some kind of a thing that's going to take on a life of its own. It will still be a cooperative of 50 states, and there may be one or two states that say, no, we're not, we're going to take our ball and go home. That's okay. And that's just the way it is. I mean, all of this scare tactic is caused by one of two things. Either, as Keith said tonight, left-wing or progressive I dare even say conservative, because there are as many conservative power brokers with an interest in keeping the system the way it is as there are liberal power brokers with keeping the system the way it is. Understand that, folks. There are as many Roy Blunts and John Boehners in Washington, D.C., and Mitch McConnells, as there are Harry Reids and Barack Obamas. So this isn't, I don't ever intend to portray this as a left-wing propaganda movement. It is a power broker propaganda movement. It's being bought into by a lot of well-meaning conservatives who just don't know any better, and or who are scared, who have been scared by all of the talk. And I want to continue to rail and rant and rave to that group and say, what are you scared of? My God, the Constitution is being amended every day. It's being ripped to shreds. If you're not ready now to get down in the trenches and fight these people, then, you know, we had Mike Moon on last week, Keith. And Mike said
good
something
man.
that was
good
in
man.
My mind, profound. And he said there's two ways to fix this right now, and only two ways. One is this, and the other is bloodshed. And none of us want bloodshed. So this is it. This may be the last stand.
Quote, Dave.
Yes.
Let me share the most powerful quote that I've ever written. And I want to tell folks, if you're really interested in this, there's some things that you need to do. First of all, you need to look up Rob Nadelson on the internet, and there's several publications that he has.
Spell it, Keith, for
Rob
people that have a pencil and paper in their hand. Okay.
Sure, R-O-B, and then it's N-A-T-E-L-S-O-N. And there's a paper that he put out called The Founding Era Conventions. Founding Era Conventions. That, to me, is one of the most meaningful ones that I started. But there's three in a set, really. And this man has just written a lot, and he makes the point that he hasn't got an axe to grind, and that's what I want folks to, you know, who maybe are wondering, well, where did this fear come from? Where did this whole idea of fearing the convention and this idea of a runaway convention come from? It came from folks who had an axe to grind. And there's been three phases of writing about Article 5, and the oldest stuff that was out there was written by people who had an agenda, and their agenda was to make sure the convention didn't happen. And so they put this fear out there and trying to dissuade a convention of the states. Then we have this idea of a runaway convention, and so they had to have some idea, you know, some way to perpetrate. But I want to share with you what I started to say a while ago is, to me, is the most powerful quote about the convention of the states. And it comes from a man who knows about bloodshed. It comes from a man who was the president of the Confederacy. I think he was a wise man, and I think he was the more I study about Jefferson Davis, is he was a man that was thrust into that position, and he did the best he could. And his memoirs are full of wisdom, because, you know, he got to look at that, and then he got to write about some of that. But in his memoirs, if you read a book by Russell Kaplan called Constitutional Brinkmanship, you'll find this quote. It's in his book called The Rise and Fall of the Confederate Government, which he wrote in 1881. Jefferson Davis, in his memoirs, regretted that in earlier and better times, when the prospect of serious difficulties first arose, a convention of the states was not assembled. And I want to tell you, the last part of that I want to read again. It says, a convention of the states was not assembled. The first time I read those words, I can tell you where I was, and I can tell you that I began to weep, because nearly every town in America, in the South and some of the Midwest, nearly every town has a small cemetery, something represented those folks, dedicated to those folks who died in that conflict.
On both sides.
Whether you call it the War of Southern Aggression, whether you call it the Civil War, it doesn't matter, because we've just learned not long ago that this number of 650,000 people dying is probably about 200,000 people short. It's closer to 850,000 people died. And, you know, hindsight's 20/20, but I just wondered what would happen if Jefferson Davis could have had a glimpse of what was in store earlier rather than later. You know, if we could just get a glimpse of what our children are in store for in the years to come. My 3-year-old is going to be 30 in the year 2042. No, 2040, I'm sorry. And if she would happen to have a daughter when she's 24, that little girl, which I know will be special to her, will be her life, just like she is to mine. Her daughter will be 30 in the year 2064. And when you look at the charts, and you look at the interest, and you look at the debt, and the decay, and the all of the D words, despair, that they're in for, if we could just get a glimpse of that, we would stop right now. We would stop a basketball game in mid-stride, and we'd all sit down. We'd stop a football game, and we'd all come out, and we'd get down on our knees. And we would begin to plot and plan a strategy. But you see, for some reason, we don't have that hindsight. We don't have that glimpse. But I call on folks to stop what you're doing and try to just find out what's in store for those folks that are so special to you and begin to plot a strategy. I want to get back to this idea of limiting the convention. Every Article 5 convention is limited. Some folks say, well, you just can't limit it, and they're really, you know, uncertainty is just so prevalent. The idea of uncertainty and the idea of getting out of control would be absurd to the framers. It's this idea that someone's going to, you know, the idea is that they're going to go beyond what they've been at. They're going to disregard their prescribed limits on their authority and somehow damage the Constitution that gives them the authority to be there in the first place, which is, you know, they would find it absurd. The founders adopted this process as an integral part of the Constitution's checks and balances. And so we need to look at that. Now, when I say every convention is limited, first of all, the conventions of the founding era before and after the founding, you know, it was they didn't write much about it because they were, if anything, the framers were veterans of conventions. Some of those folks, this was their 7th convention. Some of them, it was the 5th. And they knew how they worked. They'd been going to conventions, you know, some of them a great deal of time. And when they called for a convention of proposing amendments, Supreme Court says it's important to know what they meant in their day and understand how they understood it. And for folks who say it doesn't matter what happened in the founding era, the truth is the Supreme Court has said that it does matter. And anybody who knows much about the court will concede that they're looking at the historical context more. The trend is looking at it more rather than less. And so it is important what they did in the founding era and how they understood it. It's limited by the call of the states. The states call the convention, even though, I mean, they're the ones that you have to have 34. Two-thirds of the states call the convention, and they, in their call itself, can limit it. The reason we know is that conventions were limited before the founding. They were limited after the founding by a particular topic. And so I want to stop here and say the convention of the states are dedicated to calling an Article 5 convention of the states for the purpose of restraining the jurisdiction and power of the federal government. And there's another paragraph there that has to do with putting on fiscal restraints. But this convention can be limited to a particular topic, because many were. And the House Research Office last week, you mentioned Michael Moon, he submitted the language to the House Research Office, and they replied with an answer that, yes, their research shows that a Constitution, an Article 5 convention for proposing amendments can be limited. Now, they're also limited by the commission of they're called commissioners. We want to call them delegates. They weren't called delegates before. They were called commissioners because they had a commission. They had instructions, and so the states can limit their delegates about what they can do, how they can vote, by their instructions. And there were not only instructions, but there can be consequences. The Indiana legislature have already passed fairly recently legislation that not only limits delegates to following their instructions, but provides for criminal penalties and even prison time if they exceed it. But in the founding era, if a commissioner, you know, was going to go off track, he was recalled. And so the states can control this convention by their instructions. At every stage, there's an opportunity for legal lawsuits, and that's why at the convention of the states, we're all about having calls from conventions that can be aggregated. The truth is there's been over 400 calls for an Article 5 convention from various states over the years. Some would say 700 and some. I haven't counted them. But I do know one thing, that Congress has ignored them because they've never been on the same page. If you want to go to conventionofthestates.com, you will see the page. And I talked to someone in Wyoming this week, and here's a man, and I had to call him because he's out there working for Article 5 convention, never heard of Convention of the States, and someone asked him, it was in the article in the Jackson Hole, Wyoming paper, why are you doing this? And he goes, because I'm a grandpa. And I go, I got to call that fella and just give him a little encouragement. And he's now connected with Convention of the States and .com. That is the page. And, you know, 30 is about the number that, you know, Missouri has called for these before for different topics, different amendments. There's about 30 calls out there still right now. But every convention is limited because there's some other thresholds that the folks who want to scare you a little bit, they don't bother to mention, by the way, that anything that gets out of that convention, you know, if there's 50 states there, it's going to take 26 states to vote for something to get it out of that convention. And if that convention proposes an amendment, that's all it is a proposal. It's basically a piece of paper until the 38th state has ratified it. Now, that's limited. That's 38 states, and if you want to be more specific, that's 75 legislative bodies. That's two in every state of 38, but Nebraska only has one. So that's 75 legislative bodies that have to put their stamp of approval on this amendment. You see, there's two arguments. We shouldn't waste our time on Article 5 because it's impossible. We can never get anything out of there. We'll never get 38 states to ratify anything. And in the same breath, those opponents will say, yeah, but if something bad comes out of there, it may damage our Constitution. See, it's an absurd argument from the beginning to the end.
That's right. It starts and ends with two contradictory statements. And that's a very good point. And you know, let's take Keith's numbers here of 38 states, and we've said this before too. For those who want to argue against someone who says, well, yeah, but they're going to come out with some kind of amendment that takes away your guns or that makes Obamacare part of the Constitution, 13 states can say no. All it takes is 13. If it takes 38 states to say yes, any 13 states who value their own sovereignty, and you know there's more than 13 who value their own sovereignty, any 13 states can put the nicks on something bad.
Dave, I talked to a group in the Capitol, and I shared a story with them. One of my favorite movies is Apollo 13. And, you know, we all remember in April of 1970. Most people don't remember that, but they've watched the movie with Tom Hanks, and they know that, you know, these folks are out there. They're on a regular routine Gemini mission to the moon, and something goes wrong, and you know, it's a life or death situation. They're on their way to, they don't know where. They have no power, no control. But, you know, today we don't talk about the frozen bodies of three astronauts that are hurtling through space somewhere to the far reaches of the galaxy. You see, they came home. They came home because of the Americans on the ground. If you watch that movie, you remember how the Americans on the ground stopped everything, how they worked together tirelessly, and they came up with a plan. And yes, they had to be flexible. They had to do some things they hadn't planned on. They had to invent some things. But you know, those Americans came home. Today we have a government that's hurtling on autopilot. I mean, it's literally on autopilot. I don't care who the president is. Anybody who thinks that the election of 2014 or 2016 is going to do much of anything to this problem, you need to read a book or two. You need to get out and see what's really going on. This is hurtling through space, and the people in Washington are so far from the solution and so close to the problem, they are never going to fix itself. They are never going to fix it. The solutions will not come from Washington. It's only going to come from you, the Americans on the ground. I urge you to get involved. Go to the Convention of the States. Click on Action Center, and you will be automatically put in by state. You'll be able to contact your state leaders, find out what's going on. And, you know, one of these days, when your grandkids say, where were you when this happened? Or where were you when they fixed this?
That's going to be a much better question than, Grandpa, why didn't you fix this?
Dave, the last slide on a presentation that I give sometime is a picture of a person sitting on the park bench. You know, it could be a person sitting on a couch. It could be a person sitting anywhere. But the slide says doing nothing is not an option.
That's right. This is our last great hope before something really, really, really bad happens. And I want to reflect back on something that Keith said a moment ago. It doesn't matter who it doesn't even matter who your congressman or woman is. As we can see from watching the Democrats and the undocumented Democrats up in Washington, D.C., my gosh, what we have to do, folks, what we have to do is take this bull by the horns. And instead of worrying about who is president, we need to get back to what the founders wanted, and that is to make the president irrelevant to our lives. And that's the way this thing was intended. The president is supposed to fly all over the world and have dinner with world leaders and be the commander-in-chief of the military. And that is all the impact that the administrative branch of the government is to have on your day-to-day life. Zero impact that the administrative branch is supposed to have on your day-to-day life. And we've become so wrapped up in who's the president going to be. And the reason is because they have assumed so much power over what light bulb you can use and how much water's in the toilet you flush and what kind of car you can drive, what kind of health insurance you can buy. I mean, they're saving your life by telling you how damn much soda you can buy.
We know what they have in mind, because the very last bill, the one that gets all the attention, is a 2,600 page bill that somebody says we've got to pass it before we can see what's in it, and then of course we're seeing what's in it right now.
That's absolutely
right. You know, people, I understand that the despair, and there's folks, especially after the last election, you know, and there's folks that really believe that it's too late, that this is not fixable, and I don't buy that for a couple reasons. First of all, I have faith in Americans. There's some folks out there that, you know, you just show them what to do and just let them get a. We kind of have a reputation of waiting until the barn's on fire before we run to do anything about it. But when we rise up, you know, there's some great Americans out there, and they're on both coasts, and they're in the countryside in between. They're in the South, they're in the North, and they love their children. And if we can make them understand that this is about their kids and their kids' kids, I urge you to go to the website that we've mentioned, which is conventionofthestates.com, and scroll down towards the bottom. And there's a video by Michael Ferris. I want you to get to know Michael Ferris. And he, this is one he gave at Lakeland, Florida, but this will give you an overview of what this is all about and what you can do. You know, that there's no longer an opportunity to say, you know, there's nothing I can do. There is something that each of us can do. We can talk to our neighbors. We can talk to our family, tell them what this is about. You know, there's no doubt lots of reservation out there. Some, you know, some would say warranted. The reason that there's lots of reservation out there, Dave, and I want to make this point really, really plain. The reason that there's so much reservation and cautiousness is that this has never happened before. And one reason that I want this to happen, one reason that I'm going to spend my waking time until my last day to make sure this happens. One of these days, you know, we say this is our last effort. It may be for us, it may not be, but there may be a day that this may be the very last stand, that this may be what our children and grandchildren have as a last resort. And I don't want them to have to say, Dave, that this has never happened before. It's time for it to happen. And everything in the political scene is working in favor of this. You look at the, you know, just about every event. You know, there are some folks who have bit off more than they can chew. They know it. They have a mess. They're going to ride it to the bottom without changing, without adapting, without, you know. And there's going to be an opportunity for us to have a convention of the states. My last thing that I don't want to forget is to mention this. Time is not on our side. You know, every day we lose, I'm told, about 1,500 World War II veterans. And right behind those will be their children. And I'm afraid that those that are replacing them population-wise are nowhere near the common sense of those folks that we lose every day. We're losing more conservatives than we can build. And so you look at the courts, you look at about every factor there is, time is not on our side. When do we think we'll ever have a better opportunity than we have right now, than we have today? I don't think we'll have one, Dave.
We want to thank you for everything you are doing. You are an educated and a valiant trooper out there on this march towards state sovereignty. And
I'm learning a lot, Dave. I'm learning a lot. I would give all my credit, basically, of anything that we've done thus far, to John Putnam. If you know John Putnam from Southwest Missouri.
Yeah.
John's the patriot. He's the one that's teaching me anything that I've learned from John, and I've learned it. I just hope he doesn't charge me what it's worth. But I want people to know that there's a lot of fear out there. They just need to go and learn. You know, learning and knowledge will overcome this fear that people have had. And your legislator, if he's cautious, that's nothing wrong with that. Knowledge, you're helping him to understand, and first of all, how your resolve, but also you're going to have to spend some time learning, and then it takes just teach your neighbor and teach folks who are cautious. Nearly everybody who's written about this, who now is in favor, started off as a person who first of all believed it was a constitutional convention. They don't any longer. They used to believe it couldn't be controlled. Rob Nadelson doesn't believe that any longer. And that's fairly common to people. If they've learned, they had to study, come to those conclusions.
Okay, so what I want, Keith, is I want to get a commitment from you to come back from time to time and keep us updated on how things are going. and keep us interested and activated and keep our listeners moving forward on this thing. You folks out there, and it's conventionofthestates.com. On Facebook, it is Missouri Liberty Amendments Project. What else do they have out there?
Well, I just wanted folks to know that, you know, already things are happening. Levin's not the only one. There's Glenn Beck. There's Huckabee. There's a lot of folks who have endorsed this. If you know who David Barton is, David knows a lot about Article 5 and history, and hasn't endorsed it officially yet, but I'm told he will. There's four states, Virginia, South Carolina, Florida, and Georgia have already pre-filed legislation. Missouri's working on language right now, but it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, I don't think a dozen sponsors of this bill in the Missouri House would be, you know, it could be more. There's folks who, you know, every time I hear about it, there's another person who wants to be a sponsor, and that encourages me. Our legislators are paying attention, and they're just frankly tired of this overpowering Leviathan that's pushing on states and mandating this and mandating that. They're tired of it, and so they're ready to listen. So contact your legislator, see where they are on this issue. I sure encourage you to do that.
If you're out there and don't know how to do that, and we, you know, I'm amazed every week that we have at least one or two listeners who indicate they don't know how to do that. If you don't know who your state legislator is, turn the radio off now and go back to American Idol. If you know who your state legislator is, but are a little leery about how to get in touch with them, or a little shaky on that, just listen up. We go through this every week, and I want to go through it again. You go to house.mo.gov and senate.mo.gov. That's house.mo.gov and senate.mo.gov. There's a list on both those pages of all the members of the House and all the members of the Senate. Find your senator, find your rep, click on their name, and it will immediately give you an option to email them. It will give you a phone number to call them in Jefferson City. And, you know, we've had...
Dave, I want to say that, you know, I was going to say, if there are folks out here listening that they find this, they're really comfortable doing this, I'm going to encourage them to find a friend. Find somebody that's a youth or somebody that has kids. Find somebody who's never been to the Capitol before. You know, they're out there. People who have never been to the Capitol, but they care about their country. If you know how to get around in the Capitol, I encourage you to find one of these folks and begin to mentor them and take them into the Capitol. Introduce them to the folks that you know. Show them you can go into an office of your legislator or your senator, and they're glad to see you. And
yes.
Maybe they are. Maybe they're not. They're busy. But, you know, they work for you. And it's up to you to figure out how to get in that office and let them know what you think and what your opinions are. You have a responsibility as well as an opportunity to do it.
That's what we're talking about here. When we talk about state sovereignty, that's what we're talking about. You can go. You know, that is why state sovereignty is so damned important, folks. You cannot go to Washington, D.C. and drop in on Roy Blunt or Claire McCaskill. You can't go to Washington, D.C. and drop in on Billy Long. You just can't do it. Not because you can't get there. If you can drive a car, you can get there. You just don't get to. And that's why state sovereignty is so important, because when we reduce the level of control over your life to the state level, and the word sovereignty has some meaning. Some level of government has to decide how fast you can drive. Some level of government has to decide you can't sit out naked in your front yard. Some level of government has to decide these things. And if we can reduce that level of government to the state, you are suddenly once again being governed by people whose office you can walk into, who, like Keith
said, are glad
to see you because they know you signed the paycheck.
Yeah. Exactly.
Go ahead.
You know, I was just going to say, just think about the genius of the founders. We've been talking this evening about the amending process. Just think about the genius of these men who put your liberty and the liberty of your children. They could see the wisdom of not putting it completely and alone and singly and exclusively in the hands of a Congress.
Right.
And they put it in the hands of your state legislator. You're in your state legislator's boat, you know. And I tell people, I said, you know, we are unmoored from our Constitution. You know, while we were busy being the best we can be, and we were busy, some of us were just flat asleep, and we were just hanging out. Someone came along and untied our boat, and we are adrift now. But the genius of the founders was they put this power of changing the Constitution and regaining that balance in the hands of your state legislators. They're not all perfect, but, you know, the ones I know are solid folks. Most of those folks are they're good folks, or they wouldn't be there. And if they're not good folks, it's up to you to make sure that, you know, that they need to go home and find a job, because they're representing you, and it's your responsibility to know who they are and what they're voting for every day.
Okay, thanks for dropping in, Keith. It's been great. I'm gonna stay in touch with you. I want to have you back at least maybe once every couple of weeks, probably not for an hour, hour and a half, but at least to touch base with you and find out what's going on over there, find out how this thing is moving. I know you're in touch with the people in Jefferson City personally, and you're writing this thing. Keith said something to me on the phone the other day when we talked, and I'm going to say this, and then I'm going to get in another plug for Missouri Grassroots Coalition here, because this is what we're all about. Keith said, "I have made this my single issue," you know. That is, you know, we appreciate that, Keith. We laud it. We need it. We want it. We long for it. Now,
what it'll do too, Dave, it'll bring a lot of folks together. We're pretty fractured here in Missouri, and I'm a brand new. I'm the newest person on the block. And I was really honored and humbled that there were some folks who would listen to what I had to say for 5 minutes the other day in the Capitol building. But what I have learned is that we're fractured. You know, and what we've been doing, Dave, we've been playing whack-a-mole, and we need to stop and figure out where all this stuff is coming from and go to the source. And this issue does that. It's not going to fix everything, and it's not a silver bullet, but if we can just change a little bit of the structure, I think we're going to find out that we're going to be fighting a lot fewer battles. They're going to come a lot slower, but I hope this is an issue that every Missourian, every conservative can look at and say, you know, this matters. If we don't do this, I'm not so sure the rest of the issues matter that much.
Exactly. And I want to point all of you folks out there one more time to Missouri Grassroots Coalition. It's on the web. It's at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. On Facebook, it is Missouri Grassroots Coalition, because, like I say, this is, and rightfully so, Keith's single issue. I understand where you people, you listeners out there, all of you listeners out there, I understand where you're coming from. You know, you've got jobs, you've got families, you've got work, you get up in the morning. How the hell can I keep track of what's going on, what they're doing with Common Core, and what they're doing with Article 5, and what they're doing with this, you know, with the State Repeal Amendment, what they're doing with the Second Amendment Preservation Act, what they're doing with this, and what they're doing with that, and what the hell's going on with this Department of Transportation thing? Well, thank God we have people like Keith, and thank God we have people like Gretchen Logue, and thank God we have people like Ron Putnam, and Ron Calzone, and Carl Bearden, who are single-issue people. And what you can do at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org is you can in one place, grab the information from all of these sources, because what we try to do there is we try to invite every one of these people. You'll find posts there every day from MOPP, Missouri Precinct Project. You'll find post there every day from Gretchen Logue, the education watchdog who's watching Common Core close for you. You'll find information every day there from Keith Carmichael. You'll find information every day there from Carl Bearden. You'll find information every day there from Ron Putnam. You'll find information there every day from all of these people who are out there doing that stuff that you come home at night exhausted, barely get some supper, watch a couple innings of the ball game before you fall asleep in the chair. I get it. I get it. And that's why I say Missouri Grassroots Coalition is important to you, because all of these folks who are dedicating themselves to these things for you, they bring all that information there to one central location, and there it is for you. So that's MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org on the internet, Missouri Grassroots Coalition at Facebook. You can follow us at Twitter. I want to thank you for everything you do, Keith. I want to thank you for being with us tonight. I want you to thank you for sharing with us and for educating us. It's been great. I've absolutely enjoyed this show. I look forward to having you back.
Be my pleasure to be back, and I sure appreciate the opportunity.
Thanks, Keith. Good night.